Take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
CannabisRadio.com presents The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Hey, this is great, man. Well, on the
earth. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-token lovers of liberty. It is Tuesday, August 23rd, 2016, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us here on a beautiful day in beautiful legal potland, Oregon. And welcome to the show. We've got plenty of marijuana news and interviews and Seattle Hemp Fest highlights for you on today's show. But before we get to all that, I've got breaking news coming across from our friend Tom Angel out at marijuana.com. He's the head of the marijuana majority at marijuanamajority.com. And he reports on a decision just handed down by the U.S. 10th Circuit Court of Appeals. This one's a big one, folks. It had to do, 10th Circuit, that's Colorado, had to do with a guy driving out of Colorado in a car with Colorado plates, stopped in Kansas because he had Colorado plates. And the 10th Circuit ruled today that you cannot just use someone's out-of-state plates as a justification for pulling them over and searching them. And this is a quote from the decision today. Quote, currently, 25 states permit marijuana use for medical purposes, with Colorado, Alaska, Oregon, Washington, and Washington, D.C., permitting some recreational use under state law. Thus, the officer's reasoning would justify the search and seizure of the citizens of more than half of the states in our country. It is wholly improper to assume that an individual is more likely to be engaged in criminal conduct because of his state of residence. And thus, any fact that would inculpate every resident of a state cannot support reasonable suspicion. Accordingly, it is time to abandon the pretense that state citizenship is a permissible basis upon which to justify the detention and search of out-of-state motorists, and time to stop the practice of detention of motorists for nothing more than an out-of-state license plate. That is an amazing decision that we've gotten out of the 10th Circuit. That's going to help a lot of people driving out of Colorado. Doesn't help my friends on the western end of Interstate 84 driving from Oregon through Idaho, because that's in the 9th Circuit. But who knows? Maybe we'll get a decision there or a conflicting decision. We can take this all the way to the Supreme Court, because no way should your license plate, just what state you're from, be a justification for law enforcement to be harassing you and searching you. So good news there. We'll get more in depth on that on tomorrow's show. Now, coming up on today's show, after we get to the Cannabis Radio news, we've got a cannabis focus segment on that Publix story. You know, the grocery chain down there in Florida, and the heiress from that chain who donated $800,000 against medical marijuana in the state of Florida. Well, now they're fighting back, and there's a story on this on how Irv Rosenfeld, one of the two remaining federal medical marijuana patients, his wife is leading the charge in some respects, along with Bobby Platshorn and Karen Goldstein at Normal of Florida and a bunch of other folks, Michael Minardi and others, leading this charge against Publix, and it's starting to have an effect. Then we'll get to some drug war data mining. In the data mines today, we take a look at forecasts from the ArcView Group on just how big the marijuana industry will become by the year 2020. Then, after about half past, we get to our Government at Work segment. We've got John Getman, PhD, joining us. He's a former director of Normal and the author of two of the four petitions that were rejected for rescheduling by the DEA. He'll tell us about this latest rejection. Then at the end of the show, we'll have time for Cannabis Chronicles with Derek Davis, the CEO of California Cannabis CPA. Then in hour two, highlights from Seattle Hemp Fest. Myself on the black stage, Martin Lee from Project CBD, and Allison Drayson from Edaluz in Washington State. It's all coming up next on The Russ Belville Show.
This is The Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
earn your PhD in THC monetization with CannabisRadio.com. Don't be late.
The cannabis business industry is growing. Business is booming. And as new opportunities arise in newly legalized states, each market is getting more competitive. Today, it takes more than just being a good grower. Do you have the resources to market and handle this ever-changing business landscape? Let Canna Management Corporation help you grow your canna business with our vast resources and experience to make your business a fully functional service company. Financial management, HR, sales, marketing, efficiency, and more. CMC has the experience and the expertise to improve your business and help you better meet the demands of your clients and customers. Call Canna Management Corporation and let our team get you ready to grow. 415-269-8015. That's 415-269-8015. Or visit canna-management.com.
Tommy Chong is ready to cut through the smoke and change the tone of Tilk Radio.
All you have to do is decriminalize. We don't need a government regulation to tell us this is good pot, that's bad pot. We don't need any of that.
The Tommy Chong Podcast, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome to my world.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Each year on my birthday, every American gets a cupcake.
Okay, maybe you're high too.
When you are starting up a medical cannabis business, you want a fired-up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired-up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Visit her website, fireduplawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your fired-up lawyer, or email fireduplawyer@gmail.com.
It's time for the Cannabis Radio News. Covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Cannabis Radio News is now available exclusively at CannabisRadio.com. Now your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds. This is Cannabis Radio News.
This is your Cannabis Radio News for Tuesday, August 23rd, 2016. Portland, Oregon. Tax revenue from legalized marijuana in Oregon has blown away initial two-year forecasts in just the first 7 months of sales. The Oregon Liquor Control Commission had originally projected that the state would garner $18.4 million in tax revenue in 2016 and 2017 combined. Portland's KGW reports that Oregon reaped over $25 million from January through July of this year alone, according to the State Department of Revenue. Oregon taxes recreational cannabis at 25% in early sales from medical marijuana dispensaries. When recreational stores go live later this year, a state tax of 17%, along with local taxes as much as 3%, will go into effect. Las Vegas, Nevada. Mixed martial artist Nate Diaz may be in trouble for using a cannabidiol vape pen at a press conference after he lost his rematch with Conor McGregor in UFC 202. UFC rules forbid marijuana use 6 hours before or after a match, and Diaz complied with the mandatory post-fight urine screening. Diaz's admission could lead to sanctions from the Nevada State Athletic Commission and the UFC. Nate's brother Nick, also a world-class mixed martial artist, is currently serving an 18-month suspension for multiple positive screenings for marijuana metabolites. Both Diaz brothers have been outspoken proponents of medical marijuana use in sports. Memphis, Tennessee. Memphis is joining Nashville in pursuing a municipal marijuana decriminalization ordinance. The Memphis City Council passed the first reading of the measure that would treat possession of a half ounce or less of marijuana as a civil infraction with a $50 ticket or community service. Last week, Nashville's Metro Council passed a first reading of a similar ordinance. Both cities will reconsider their ordinances in at least two more votes before they become law. Current state law in Tennessee treats possession of less than an ounce as a misdemeanor with a potential year in jail and a $2,500 fine. Los Angeles, California. Paramedics responded Monday to another rash of illnesses among a group of people in the Skid Row area of Los Angeles, where people have attributed similar incidents to use of a synthetic form of marijuana known as spice. Firefighters evaluated 18 patients and took 14 of them to the hospital for doctors to determine the cause of the symptoms, said Fire Department spokeswoman Margaret Stewart. On Friday, emergency responders took 18 people to hospitals from the downtown area where the homeless gather. Fire Department spokesman Brian Humphreys said those treated Friday showed difficulty with muscular coordination, had slurred speech, and were vomiting. Police Sergeant Ed Kinney told City News Service that officers believe that group consumed synthetic drugs from the same batch because of the large volume of calls within the same time frame. Little Rock, Arkansas. Arkansas Attorney General Leslie Rutledge has again rejected a proposed constitutional amendment for the 2018 ballot to legalize marijuana in the state. The proposal by Mary Berry of Summit would allow the cultivation, production, distribution, sale, possession, and use of the cannabis plant and all products taken from the plant, including marijuana. Rutledge wrote in Monday's opinion that the proposal is being rejected because of ambiguities that include whether a license is required to distribute marijuana, whether state agencies or the legislature may adopt rules to revoke or suspend the licenses, and that it's unclear how and by whom various state agencies would be appointed to oversee the law. Rutledge in April approved a similar ballot proposal by Berry for the November 2016 election, which isn't affected by Monday's action. Phoenix, Arizona. State officials say they received hundreds of applications for approximately 30 new licenses for medical marijuana dispensaries. The Department of Health Services says it has processed 750 applications and that it anticipates awarding 31 dispensary licenses after reviewing those applications that are deemed to be complete and in compliance with requirements. Arizona now has 99 licensed dispensaries, and 92 of those are open and operating. According to the department, 97% of the state's residents live within 25 miles of an operating dispensary. The department administers the medical marijuana program launched through the voters' approval of a 2010 proposition and initiative campaign. This has been your Cannabis Radio News for Tuesday, August 23rd, 2016. I'm Russ Belville.
Forwarding the cause of legalization and research of the growing cannabis industry, one podcast at a time. The Cannabis Radio Network.
Cash?
Sorry.
I don't carry around cash, and I don't want to use the ATM and pay surcharges.
You don't need to carry cash. Haven't you heard about PayQuick?
Okay, tell me about PayQuick.
It's the safe and easy way to pay. It works just like your debit card to securely pay for your purchase, and it gives you rewards points every time you use it.
Nice.
PayQuick, the safe and easy way to pay. PayQuick.com.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
Coming soon to a city near you, Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. Get all your cannabis accounting, legal, and compliance questions answered by their knowledgeable panel of industry experts who want to help your cannabis business boom. Whether you're a grower, dispensary operator, or a newcomer to the field, your cannabis business needs Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. For information on upcoming events, visit CannabisFinanceBootcamp.com.
The world of cannabis is evolving at a frenetic pace. The Russ Belville Show gets behind the headlines to take a deeper look at breaking news in our Cannabis Focus.
Today in the Cannabis Focus, we want to bring you an update on that Publix story that we've been telling you about. Publix is the largest grocery chain operating in the state of Florida. They've got 43% of the market share in Florida. To give you an idea how big Publix is in Florida, the second largest grocer is Walmart. Okay, so this is a big, big company in Florida, and the heiress of that company, a newly minted billionaire named Carol Jenkins
Bennett. Is that it? Carol Jenkins Barnett. There we go. Not Bennett. Carol Jenkins Barnett donated $800,000 to the group that is opposing the medical marijuana initiative in Florida. And we had told you how groups were gathering to petition and to protest against Publix. Our own good friend Robert Platshorn and the Silver Tour put together some protest signs and took them to numerous Publix locations for a boycott. I think it was last Saturday of Florida Normal, Normal of Florida, I should say, involved as well. And Legalize Florida, I think, is the name of the legalization group down there that was involved. This latest update comes to us from the Miami New Times, a piece written by Jerry Iannelli. More than 41,000 demand Publix heiress stop fighting medical marijuana. This was filed yesterday. And it talks about how there's a petition on change.org that has gathered more than 41,000 signatures calling on Jenkins Barnett to stop using her profits, her income, her wealth from the Publix chain to fund her political beliefs. And the petition was started by Heidi Hanford. Now, Heidi Hanford is the wife of Irv Rosenfeld, who's the Florida stockbroker who remains as one of two federal medical marijuana patients. The program that was begun back in 1978 when Robert Randall sued to treat his glaucoma with cannabis. Program grew to as many as 28 applicants, 15 at one time, I think was the most there ever was. And of those people, there are just two remaining, Irv Rosenfeld on the East Coast in Florida and Elvie Musica on the West Coast here in Oregon, who still receive tins of 300 pre-rolled joints from the federal government to treat their medical conditions. In Irv's case, it's a degenerative bone tumor type of disease. So Hanford wrote in her petition, "I never thought buying groceries could be a political statement. That is, until I realized the family that owns Publix donated nearly $1 million to a platform that I strongly oppose." Now, Publix is a very popular store, obviously, with 43% of the market share, and a lot of people have a lot of good things to say about Publix. But this is a campaign now that is growing in popularity, with over 41,000 people signing up against it. Jenkins Barnett, the CEO, the former CEO of Publix, who donated the $800,000, has been a great philanthropist. She's donated, helped to have the company donate more than $25 million a year to various charities. Also gave $250,000 to help the victims of that nightclub shooting in Orlando. Sadly, she's had to step down from her role on the board of directors because of early onset Alzheimer's disease. So there's your daily dose of irony. Someone with Alzheimer's disease donating almost $1 million to fight medical marijuana. Now, Publix, again, claims that this has nothing to do with them. This isn't Publix being against medical marijuana. This is someone who is doing it as their own personal donation. But, of course, Hanford writes in her petition, quote, "Publix's donation to Drug-Free Florida finances a campaign against medical marijuana, a therapy my spouse has successfully used for over 30 years to treat his rare bone disorder." And it's hard to separate this. Hanford writes, "The money I was spending on groceries was being used to take down the Florida's right to a medical marijuana initiative. My significant other is proof that this drug eases suffering, and I feel betrayed by a corporation I used to patronize." And others argue that it's hypocritical, as Hanford writes, that Publix has no problems selling drugs like opioids, alcohol, caffeine, and nicotine across their stores and pharmacies, but they use my money to dispute what numerous studies have shown: marijuana is medicine. And good luck on the protests. And any of our listeners in the South, please find someplace else to shop. Take your money away from Publix,
at least until we get this amendment passed in Florida. There's no reason we should be giving them any profits.
I know nothing. Nothing.
All right, that sound means it's 20 after. Time for us to take a brief safety meeting. And when we return, we'll take our time in the drug board data mines where we forecast how big the marijuana industry could be by the year 2020. I'm Radical Russ, live from Portland. We're back in just a couple minutes.
Next to THC and CBD, you can now add CBR to your cannabis vernacular. CBR as in cannabisradio.com.
Oh, lady marijuana, llama, tell you something now. About a game for your phone, gonna make you say, wow! The game's about the game of growing cannabis for cash. Grow the seeds, sell the bud, put the savings in the stash. Little by little, your empire grows large. Put the big celebrities inside your entourage. You can choose to play with Snoop or me or Cheech and Chong. Cypress Hill, Willie Nelson, Wiz Khalifa with a bong. The name of the game is Hemping, that's the point. Download and play while you light yourself a joint. The business of cannabis should be no crime. Hemp Inc. is even hot proved by the man who run High Times. Oh yeah, get it on Android and iOS today. Marijuana Llama out. Got to tend to me own crops, you know. Money don't make itself. Hemp Inc.
Hello and welcome all you high-flying, die-trying, roll a Philly blunt for your friend hempsters, every roach-smoking bong token, however you get your THC canethusiasts, all you rebels, individualistic originals, and outside-the-box ganja warriors, you chunky monkey, Cherry Garcia, munchie-loving hempsters, all you captive earth surfers, astral travelers, and ganja-loving connoisseurs, all you high-flying, wide-smiling, ganja-rific cannabophiles, welcome to everyone! Except Donald Trump supporters, because that's how I really feel.
The Grow Show with Kyle Cushman, only on CannabisRadio.com.
The Russ Belville Show, providing dictionaries to drug czars since 2009.
The Russ Belville Show is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association in the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com, and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
Promoting the end of adult cannabis prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It's even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more on this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
Today in the data mines, we get a new forecast coming from the ArcView Group and New Frontier, a couple of market research firms in the cannabis space. And the latest forecasts say that by the year 2020, legalizing recreational marijuana in California by the year 2020 could grow the California marijuana industry to $6.5 billion. $6.5 billion if Californians should pass Prop 64 this November. Also in the data mines, we have news of some polling on the Adult Use of Marijuana Act, Prop 64. A couple of polls come out recently show about 60 to 64% support for the measure. Kevin Sabet from Project SAM and the SAM Action Group, which has actually raised a bunch of money to try to oppose this, did some polling on their own. And of course, in their polling, they take it beyond the should marijuana be legalized question, and they start delving deep in trying to find weaknesses, the chinks in the armor, so to speak, in Prop 64. And they supposedly ask people, well, if you knew legalization was going to contain advertising, or if you knew legalization was going to do this, and they supposedly say that they find a decrease in support for the measure. But even amongst SAM's own polling, The decrease in support takes it down to 56%. So even our opponents' polls show Prop 64 has a good chance to win. Now, if the Adult Use of Marijuana Act is passed, and it looks like it shall, and implemented by its target dates in 2018, they say the first year of the California industry will be $1.6 billion. And then by 2020, again, up to 6.5. So we are going to see an incredible growth. For comparison's sake, sales in Colorado for its year, first year, were a little less than a billion. So California is going to be six times that market by 2020, they're saying. I think they're underestimating this stuff, but we shall see. Perhaps they're factoring in the massive economy of scale that'll bring the price down so much that it's harder to set those lofty numbers. Of course, California is one of the largest economies, not just it's the largest economy in America, but one of the largest economies in the world. If you count California as a country, it's one of the largest economies in the world. Nearly half of the legal cannabis sales in America take place in California with respect to medical cannabis. And the ArcView researchers here also point out that California's size and the capital and technology available in Silicon Valley is going to add to, as they say, quote, there's going to be a professionalism of the industry, an emphasis on innovation once the market is legal in California that will dramatically accelerate the industry in a way that legalization in Colorado and Washington hasn't been able to do. So California is going to flip the switch here, not just in America by setting in the entire West Coast as a legal zone, but south of the border in Mexico. With Mexico experiencing so much violence with respect to the drug trade, legalization in California should have a severe impact on that. And Mexico is starting, along with other Latin American and South American countries, to come around on at least decriminalization and certainly on medical marijuana. We're also going to see research on cannabis like we've never seen before. 10% of the sales tax from legalized marijuana is to be spent on cannabis research, and another 10% on drug abuse research. So we're going to get more research on cannabis than we've ever seen before. As far as medical marijuana goes, it's at about $2.75 billion in 2015, the most recent data available. $2.75 billion. And they're saying by 2020, medical marijuana will be at $2.5 billion. So not a big loss in the wake of legalized recreational marijuana. And it's the same effect we've seen in Colorado, where the medical marijuana sales have stayed relatively steady, even as recreational sales have vastly increased. They're predicting a similar effect in California, with medical sales staying virtually about $2.5 billion for the next 5 years, 4 or 5 years. We've got also the situation of medical marijuana in California having recently been regulated with the Medical Cannabis Act, that Medical Cannabis Regulation and Safety Act. And there is currently a situation where people are prospecting for land out there in California for the new pot grows. We've told you, or actually I interviewed someone here on the show talking about the CEO from the Cultivation Technologies Incorporated that was putting together a 111,500 square foot facility, growing, processing, testing facility in Coachella, California. And I know this is a fear for some people in the cannabis community that there's going to be this corporatization of marijuana and these big, massive industries that will evolve around it. There's this fear that they're going to take, we're giving cannabis away to the corporations. And folks, don't worry. We had a situation for 80 years where the entire weight of the local, state, and federal government said we couldn't have any cannabis whatsoever. And we managed to form an entire business plan around that. Once marijuana becomes legal, how much worse could it be than being thrown in prison? The cannabis plant and its people will always overcome. I have no doubt about that. We're up with John Getman next.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Keep your cannabis cravings under control. Feed your mind with CannabisRadio.com.
While the feds and state are doing their dance, you still need to transact business and manage your cash. Go professional and let your customers pay with PayQuick. They pay you and they earn rewards points. PayQuick connects to your bank account for free and secures all of your transactions. And with PayQuick, you can pay your producers and processors for free. Plus, it pays to have it because it makes depositing your cash safe and so easy. No cops, no crooks, just compliance and comfort, knowing you have your cannabis business in check with PayQuick. PayQuick, the safe and easy way to pay. PayQuick.com.
Hi, I'm Montel Williams. Most of you know me as a talk show host, but I'm also an author, actor, single father of four, avid snowboarder, and I'm also a medical marijuana patient. Living with multiple sclerosis, I'm in pain every day. Medical marijuana is my last resort, and it helps me when all other drugs have failed. If you'd like more information about medical marijuana, you can contact the Marijuana Policy Project at mpp.org or call 1-877-JOIN-MPP.
This is the Russ Belville Show, annoying Kevin Sabet since 2012.
Are you playing an acoustic guitar but want to be louder without an amp? Try a Resonator guitar. The fingerboard extension has National Resophonic and other resonators, square necks and round necks. Stop by the fingerboard extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com. Go wild hog in the woods.
Reforming America's marijuana prohibition laws takes education, lobbying, and voting. From Washington, D.C. to your state capitol to your city hall, marijuana law reform involves all levels of civic life. Learn how you can make your impact with elected officials as we take a look at our government at work.
Welcome back, everyone. 32 after the hour, and today in our government at work, we are joined by John Getman, a former director of Normal and one of the most educated people on this topic that we could possibly talk to. John, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Russ. Glad to join you.
Thank you so much for being here. And the topic, of course, is this rescheduling decision by the DEA, or I should say decision not to reschedule by the DEA, cannabis being in Schedule 1. And for our listeners out there, the reason why it's so perfect to have John here is he's one of the few people that's actually petitioned the DEA on behalf of Normal and other organizations to reschedule and been rejected. So, John, were you at all surprised by this rejection?
No, I'm sorry to say that I wasn't surprised at all. I was wrapped up in this for like 16 years on two different rescheduling attempts. And actually, when I joined Normal, they were just wrapping up a 22-year effort to try this. And I kind of hoped that maybe that when the states of Washington and Rhode Island tried this, and also one of my old colleagues New Mexico, who also tried this, but yeah, so I was hoping maybe because the states had asked, maybe asked nicely as opposed to being a reform activist, they'd react differently. But looking over the reasoning and the logic and the fine print and the detail, no, it's the same argument they've been making for years, just in slightly different detail, slightly different versions. But it's the classic round peg in a square hole argument, and really, I thought that what was the third attempt to reschedule, it was my second attempt, failed. I think that sort of proved me the Controlled Substances Act wasn't really an appropriate framework for marijuana reform, and this latest effort really just confirmed that.
You know, I've been saying since this came out that it's like trying to fit a leaf-shaped drug through a pill-shaped hole, and with your round peg square hole, same basic idea. So when we hear Hillary Clinton as a presidential candidate promising to reschedule to Schedule 2 once she's elected, is that a viable promise, or is the very structure itself, doesn't matter who we elect, it's going to stay in Schedule 1?
I think it's a sincere promise on her part. She's playing catch up on this issue, and it's not one that she's nearly as fully briefed or has the expertise or advice on as she does on many other issues. It's one that's really just popped up recently on her political radar. By the way, your description of the situation I thought was much better than mine. But
thank you.
The point here, you know what? One of the issues here is that, it's like with marijuana arrests in general. You know, there's a lot we can criticize the cops on, but they didn't write the laws. And there's a lot here we can criticize DEA and, for that matter, FDA about on this. But they didn't write this law either. And I think really the problem here is a fundamental one with the statute. It was written, for pharmaceutical drugs. And I have a lot of things to criticize the DEA about, but I don't mean to oversimplify or trivialize their efforts. But let me just appear to do that. Their job is to count pills. Their job is to count pills at a factory and in display court, in distribution corridors, and in pharmacies, and make sure none have leaked out of the system. That is, in the late 60s when this early 70s when this framework, the FSA, was designed, they're thinking about speed, about amphetamines, about PEP pills, and about tranquilizers and sedatives. I don't think tranquilizers were invented in, but the point is, they're thinking about pharmaceutical drugs and how you can monitor them. And, academic commentators have pointed out that kind of regimen works when you have when you control the technology of production. It's kind of hard to control the technology of production of pot. That's what CSA doesn't really work with it. Anybody can grow it anywhere. But, if you're talking about something you need a large factory to do, it's kind of easy for the DEA to keep track of it. So, on that basic premise, it's not going to work. And then there's a second problem. By the way, marijuana is a little bit too complicated to be reviewed as a pharmaceutical drug. Again, this is made for something like codeine. But the other problem here, it's a real subtle one, and it's one that any president's going to run into. And actually, I'm beginning to think Obama was pretty smart in saying, look, Congress has to do this. There's a classic problem in government. It's something we teach in introductory courses, public administration. There's an inherent clash between the political appointees and the long-term career professional civil servants who work for the government. And in this case, those long-term career civil servants, they're the ones who do the extensive scientific review of any substance that is being considered for rescheduling. And then when they come up with a recommendation, the political appointees, they sort of have to follow that recommendation. They have a little wiggle room. But here's the problem. If there's this is magic saying about administrative actions. The courts will let the government do what it wants to do as long as what they want to do is not unreasonable, arbitrary, or capricious. And that's why they can interpret the CSA they want to, and that's why even though we've had reasonable arguments to reschedule, they've had a reasonable basis for not rescheduling. Now, here's the problem. Unreasonable means that they have a rational argument. Arbitrary means they didn't make a snap decision. They actually thought about it for a while and studied it. Those things are pretty self-evident. Capricious is an interesting one. It basically means they didn't treat one set of issues a certain way and the issue at hand another way. And here's what would happen if Clinton ordered the bureaucracy to reschedule, and the bureaucracy, did a scientific review and they recommended otherwise, and then Clinton's political appointees overrode that. Well, you know, it'd be rescheduling. It would be challenged by opponents of rescheduling, and they'd say that the move was capricious, that it wasn't consistent with how things have been dealt with in the past. Mm. Now, I think there's a way around all that, but I think it's just too much of an administrative mess and too much of a legal mess and too much of a time-consuming mess to really be a viable way to do this. Basically, Congress has to deal with this, and the more people try to use rescheduling, you just give Congress an out, an excuse not to do their job.
And I think, thank you so much for that perspective on that, because a lot of people bring up that the Controlled Substances Act says that, you know, upon the Attorney General's signature or the President's whim, whatever, however it's written, that they could make this change. But yeah, would it stick? That's the good point. Other things that we get out of this decision, lately there's been a meme going around Facebook of people taking pictures of their palm of their hand, with the number 6630507 on it, representing the federal government's patent on cannabinoids as neuroprotectants and antioxidants, which kind of makes the government's point. It's a cannabinoid, right?
Exactly. The dispute here is not over the substances in marijuana. The dispute is over the plant marijuana as a delivery device for those substances. Indeed, GW Pharmaceuticals' product Sativex is actually found a nice way around all this. They came up with a consistent compound, a compound that's always the same. Everybody who uses it is taking the same compound. You can test that. You can run trials on it. They've gotten approved in European countries and Canada. They're going through FDA to trials to meet FDA requirements here. It's a spray under the tongue. That'll get approved. Marinol, THC pill, that's already been approved. And there'll be other cannabinoid substances that pharmaceutical companies can manufacture if they're just that. Pharmaceuticals. That'll all work. But yeah, that patent is not, you know, the government actually doesn't dispute the fact that the cannabinoids have some value. The science there is kind of irrefutable. There are problems with the delivery device. And if you go into the very long document the DEA published in the Federal Register, they say, look, you know, there's actually only been about 20 studies, or maybe it was 11, but a handful of studies. And they say, you know, these are good studies, but they don't use the same compounds. There's no consistent results about, you know, dose and response and safety. And they say that really these are proof of concept studies that, you know, help us or help science move on to more sophisticated studies. And frankly, just admitting that these are indeed proof of concept, I think it kind of under-recognizes the value of these studies, and I also think that there's a lot out of whack here with the way they've chosen to interpret science. But the fact that they've acknowledged that these studies are valid and they actually prove something is a step forward for them.
Another thing we got out of the decision and the press conferences and press releases that came after it was a statement from Chuck Rosenberg, the head of the DEA, talking about how marijuana's classification in Schedule 1 doesn't mean that it's as dangerous as heroin or acid or PCP. It just means that it's a Schedule 1 drug. We've got about a minute and a half, John. Any thoughts on that pronouncement?
I wanted to make a legal argument that you have to prove that addiction issue, that abuse potential issue, that the statute has the word and in it, meaning it's a conjunctive statute, which is a big legal issue. What they're saying is that because of the treaties the U.S. has signed, the Single Convention Treaty, marijuana could only be in Schedule 1 or 2, and therefore the addiction issue, the abuse potential issue, is irrelevant. And so that's just a secondary issue. I think they're misinterpreting the federal court decision in the 1970s, part of Normal's original litigation. I believe a correct interpretation of what the appeals court says was, you guys, the court really said this, you guys look at all the science, find out what the science says, and if the treaty has to be changed, then go change the treaty. The DEA is interpreting it differently, but his point is that because of the way they interpret the treaty and because of what the appeals court said in the 1970s, the abuse potential thing is irrelevant. It's really all about accepted medical use.
All right. John Getman, doing such great work here, researching, petitioning, all this work you've been doing. Just in the last couple seconds we got here, tell people how they might contact you and find out more about your latest work.
Well, I have a website, drugscience.org, but I haven't updated it for several years, and I'll be kind of shifting it to a new site in the near future, but there's an email address on there. I'm doing some work on racial disparities and other demographic aspects of marijuana arrests. I have a big report about that coming out this fall before the election, and another report coming out later this year on racial disparities in all drug arrests.
All right, John Getman, thank you so much for joining us here and offering your expertise on a very complex issue. We appreciate your time.
Thank you. Anytime. Glad to see you. Talk to you.
All right, stay tuned, folks. Coming up next, we've got Derek Davis, the CEO of California Cannabis CPA on marijuana and finance.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
From dabs to chivas, sativas to indicas, we roll out a whole concentrate of fresh new content every week. It's like going from the greenhouse to the dispensary. CannabisRadio.com.
Hurry! Its temperature is shooting past 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. It's burning up.
I'm afraid for this little guy, it's just too late.
What caused the problem?
Only Dr. Dabber can maintain the perfect temperature for a smooth-tasting, slower burn. This standard vaporizer lost all of its health benefits, sending it up in smoke.
So you're telling me that most vapor pens burn so hot they produce smoke, not vapor?
Correct. Keep away from those standard vaporizer pens and turn to Dr. Dabber. Doctor's orders.
Less heat, more flavor.
Growing green to generate more green.
Hello to all you happy herbalizers, smiling trippy hippies, and everyone who believes in freedom and tolerance. This is The Grow Show, and I'm Kyle Cushman.
From food to fuel, from remedy to resource.
Welcome my guest, Ed Rosenthal, the guru of ganja. Let me ask you, right now I hear your lighter clicking. Are you smoking indoor or are you smoking sun grown?
What am I smoking? I'm smoking concentrate.
Way to get out of the answer there. So you're truly like the king, right? You just clap your hands and somebody brings you a bowl and you're all set, right?
I wish that were the case.
The Grow Show with Kyle Cushman, only on CannabisRadio.com.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
The Supreme Court is wrong on the Second Amendment.
Okay, maybe you're high too.
Don't want to spend money on a night out, but don't know what to do other than watching TV or playing video games? Consider playing guitar, bass, banjo, or mandolin. The instrument will give you hours of entertainment with friends with minimal expense. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension, downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com. Mark Twain once said that when there's a gold rush, it's a good time to be in the pick and shovel business. Today, we look at the rapidly evolving markets in the marijuana green rush in our Canna Business Chronicles. Welcome back, everyone. 48 after the hour, and joining us today in our Canna Business Chronicles, we've got Derek Davis, the CEO of California Cannabis CPA. Derek, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me today.
Yeah,
great to be here.
Yeah, glad to have you here because there's so much going on with Prop 64 on the ballot in California for legalization, and we've got these new medical marijuana regulations in California that people are already having to deal with. Give us your perspective on what's going on in California right now and what's most important for these cannabis businesses to pay attention to.
Yeah, definitely. I think with regards to the fall legalization ballot, it appears based on polls that it will probably more likely than not pass. I've seen polls around 58 to 60% approval rating, and generally speaking, the margin of error is around 3%. So even if you take the bottom number, which is 58%, you subtract out 3, it looks like it's going to pass. Specifically with regards to taxes and finances, even though it may be legalized, one thing to make note of is in terms of the 280E tax code, the only real differentiator is if the U.S. government changes it from a Schedule 1 to a Schedule 3. So irrespective of legalization in California, at least at a federal level, businesses, cannabis businesses, or any business that touches the medical marijuana plant or the recreational marijuana plant will still have to have certain tax limitations that are imposed upon them.
So with California Cannabis CPA, how do you help your clients deal with that 280E situation by, I don't know, maybe shifting some of what they're paying for to other services perhaps?
Yeah, definitely. So with specific regards to taxes, the two most important tax court rulings is the Champs and the Vapor Room. What the CHAMP tax court ruling pretty much established is that you can have multiple lines or multiple services that you offer to your patients. And that's how you can allocate some of your overhead costs, such as marketing, sales, administrative type expenses. The other tax court ruling is the Vapor ruling, which unfortunately there was a dispensary up in Northern California that was allocating or over allocating their expenses. And as a result of that, the tax courts pretty much disallowed all the expenses. So what we really help our clients with is proper tax planning and tax compliance. So, you know, it's really important from an entity structure perspective to isolate the business line that's directly touching the cannabis plant. I think that's what generally poses the largest liability, both from an expense perspective as well as a reporting perspective. So it's really important to have, you know, separate business lines with regards to who's touching the plant and what service lines are not touching the plant.
Now, there's all this that these proprietors have to deal with on the federal level, and then you got to deal with state taxes. I recently reported on something happening at the California Board of Equalization that might be some relief to some of these businesses having to do with paying their taxes in cash. Can you give us an update on that?
Yeah, so that's been a big kind of ruling. So, you know, historically what happened is if you owed over $10,000 in taxes, and you pay that within cash, you were being penalized. And you know, I'm sure as you're aware, one of the biggest hurdles that's facing the cannabis industry right now is getting proper banking. I believe I've read a stat that around 70% of cannabis businesses are operating still on a cash basis. So what the recent ruling pretty much said is, you know, they'll try to ease up or eliminate any of the penalties if you pay your taxes in cash.
That's great news for a lot of these people working in these industries. Still sad, though, that they're having to take shopping bags full of cash in to pay their taxes. Is there anything California can do on the state level to help that out?
You know, honestly, it's really hard to say. I think what kind of it comes down to is, you know, FDA, or excuse me, the Federal Depository Insurance Line, and I think what that kind of ties into is the fact that because it's still Schedule One drug, you know, I think that's really what's slowing everything down. I think, you know, the biggest impediments to that are the 280 tax code, as well as proper research and medicinal and therapeutic properties of the cannabis plant. So it's really hard to say right now. I think it's going to be really interesting to see how, you know, how the initiative does this November, as well as, you know, what rules and regulations are put in the place thereafter.
Good point. Now, with so many of these businesses having to work with so much cash, does that put an extra burden on you as a CPA, your company, your people working as CPAs, to have to, you know, double verify or to avoid, you know, any sort of money laundering or issues like that?
Yeah. I think that's a really good point. And it definitely makes our job a lot more difficult. because, you know, sometimes, especially if the individual or the client's looking at have some sort of financial statements prepared, you know, any sort of reviews, audits, compilations, why that's difficult is because then we have to physically count the cash as well. Whereas historically, you know, if this was any other business line, we could look at cash bank balances and cash statement balances, you know, to verify cash at hand. So, you know, operating in a strict cash business, it just makes specifically for accounting and, you know, financial statement preparation just makes it a lot more harder.
Yeah, undoubtedly so. And we're hoping for some federal relief on this. There are bills in Congress that are looking to add some sort of banking relief, some sort of financial services relief, tax relief. Do you know how your California senators and representatives stand on these and what success you might think we'd get out of this or the next administration?
Yeah, so I specifically know in California, you know, the Democratic Party recently endorsed the legalization proposal, which is really, really big news for us, and we're really excited about that. In terms of banking, what we're starting to see is, you know, more credit unions in Colorado and as well as Washington and in the recreational states starting to endorse, publicly endorse, you know, cannabis-related companies. But, you know, it's really hard to say. And you know, it's, I don't know, with regards to banking in particular, I don't know what types of rules or regulations will really kind of tip the edge where banks will start opening up, you know, business lines to cannabis-related companies.
Yeah, it's so difficult, you know, especially after California legalizes here in 2016 and we start opening up what ArcView is going to say is going to be in the first year alone, a $1.6 billion recreational market growing to $6.5 billion by 2020. Doesn't there have to be a point at which this can't wait any longer?
Yeah, and you know, it's so funny that you say that because California was the first medical marijuana state in 1996, but you know, we totally dropped the ball in 2010. I don't even, you know, I'm sure you knew that it was on the ballot for full legalization. It didn't even come close to passing. I think the approval was maybe 46%, 47%. But I really am hopeful that California is really kind of the industry leader simply because we're such a large state. You know, I think I've seen recent stats that have said that, you know, California as a standalone state is maybe the sixth or eighth largest economy in the world. So, you know, I'm really hopeful that, you know, we can start passing some, you know, beneficial regulations and rules and compliance for the cannabis industry, which will then trickle down throughout the remainder of the states.
Derek Davis is the CEO of California Cannabis CPA. And Derek, before we let you go here at the bottom of the hour, let's tell folks how they can get in touch with your company and learn more about cannabis and finance.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, if you'd like to chat, please check us out. Our website is CaliforniaCannabisCPA.com. You could book us on our site, and I'd be happy to set up some time thereafter to chat with you.
Fantastic. Derek Davis, CaliforniaCannabisCPA.com. Check them out and make sure this would be, you know, a good thing even for people who aren't yet in the industry but looking to get into the industry. A stitch in time saves nine. Get the expert consultation you need to make sure that you do this the right way from the beginning. Derek, thanks so much for joining us today and offering us your expertise.
Yeah, thank you as well. And if there's any other tax, finance, or other related questions I can help answer, you know, always feel free to let me know.
Will do. That's all the time we got for hour one today, folks. Thanks for joining us on this podcast. And coming up in hour two, we got more of our highlights from our trip to Seattle Hemp Fest last weekend. The third of my three speeches, my speech at the Kevin Black stage, followed by another example of myself singing with Chief Greenbud on the main stage. After our 20 after break, we'll give you some more music. My favorite band of Seattle Hemp Fest performing one of my favorite songs from the year of my birth. Then we'll wind things up with Martin Lee from Project CBD talking about cannabinoids other than CBD, and Allison Drayson from Etalus in Washington. For everyone here at CannabisRadio.com, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you grow it.